Magazine officially called it last week, "The Skinny Jean is Dead." Time of death, May 2021, possibly brought on by complications of work-from-home weight gain. Get ready for the return of straight legs, flares, baggies, and something called a barrel leg? Whatever. We expect clothing styles to go in and out of fashion. But have you ever noticed that dogs also cycle in and out of popularity? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Celebrities can drive a sudden demand for pocket dogs. Movies make us wish for a Dalmatian or a St. Bernard. Even TV commercials play a role. Remember Spuds McKenzie and the Taco Bell Chihuahua? Unfortunately, our capricious desires for certain breeds have real consequences for animal welfare, particularly those pups that happen to be the cool pet of the moment. Freelance journalist Tova K. Danovich has been reporting on this. Her article, "The Very Cute, Totally Disturbing Tale of the American It Dog," was published by Vox. Tova, welcome back to Think.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me again.
So at the moment, it seems like French bulldogs are everywhere. I see them on my route to work, which runs through downtown Dallas. What is their particular appeal?
A lot of things are appealing about the Frenchie. Some of it, of course, is how they are marketed. If you go onto the American Kennel Club website, which they essentially control the registrations of dogs to say they are purebred of X breed or not. So when you go there, they're described as, you know, a very cute, very adaptable, family-friendly dog, which essentially is what everyone is looking for in a dog. Beyond that, though, their looks are really interesting. Most dogs, you know, have the long, wolfy nose, but French bulldogs, like a lot of other brachiocephalic breeds, have a squished face. And that squished face mimics human faces a lot more closely. They also are known for making a lot of funny sounds. You can find just endless YouTube videos of French bulldogs, you know, complaining about something in a way that sounds much more human than, you know, the woofs and barks that we are used to.
So are we narcissistic in our selection of French bulldogs?
A little bit. And it certainly helps that they're, you know, very Instagram friendly with, you know, the big expressive faces. It's easy to put them in a situation where we can kind of anthropomorphize them and, you know, their desire to perhaps go out to the latest trendy cafe with us.
I have a mutt, so I don't ever really meet people who have the same kind of dog, but it's happened once or twice, and then it's super exciting. I would imagine if you have the kind of dog that is popular and you run into someone else with the same kind of dog, it feels kind of special.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way that for whatever reason, when you pass someone driving the exact same car as you, you always do that little nod. We gravitate towards people who have some kind of similarity to us, however small that might be. I have blonde hair, and I found myself in my teen years, you know, gravitating toward the one other person with blonde hair in the room who felt more comfortable to talk to, because at least we had one very visible thing in common to start from, as arbitrary as it might be.
So French bulldogs are unquestionably adorable, but that comes with some downsides. What are the kinds of health problems that French bulldogs are susceptible to?
Yeah, so like other flat-faced dogs, they're extremely prone to breathing difficulties because essentially their soft palate is severely shortened. You know, there's a reason that dogs have long noses, and part of it is that panting cools them off. So they need those tongues, that amount of space in order to do that. So they have trouble breathing. They can have sleep apnea type, you know, things much like humans might, which can be problematic. Exercise is difficult for them because they can't catch their breath. And they're also really prone to overheating because they can't cool themselves. In addition to that, they can have eye problems because their eyes protrude so much and are so wide. They can have skin issues from the wrinkles, even the shape of their bodies and that kind of small waist that French bulldogs have. In some cases leads to a really painful spinal deformity that, you know, can be corrected with expensive surgery, but it's not very fun for the dogs or the owners.
The mothers of these litters sometimes need C-sections to give birth?
It's very common. One of the things that people love about Frenchies are those really big heads on the tiny bodies. And French bulldog moms have really tiny waists. So it's super common for them to be born by C-section, which is one of the reasons, in addition to just their immense popularity, why it's very easy to find a French bulldog for upwards of $5,000.
So, broadly speaking, when we talk about French people, it's about being born in France or having ancestors in France. How exactly are dog breeds distinguished from one another?
Essentially by look. I also have mutts. And when I got them from, petfinder.com, they're all described by the breed that, whoever at the shelter thinks they look the most alike. Because it's really easy for us to look at a dog and say, you look like a golden retriever, you look like a French bulldog. So starting in about the Victorian era was the beginning of dog breeds as we know them today, where you can look at a German shepherd dog and say, that's a German shepherd because it looks like every other one of the dogs that belongs to that particular breed. But it's a relatively new phenomenon.
What does it mean to call a dog purebred as opposed to looking like a German Shepherd?
Yeah, so going back to that Victorian era, before then, people kind of referred to dogs as types or kinds. So maybe you would go to one area of the country and their shepherd dogs would all look really wolfy or they would all have floppy ears. But essentially, dogs were bred to do a certain job. So even racing dogs would look different depending on the type of terrain that they were racing on. But people got really interested in dog breeding as a hobby. In the Victorian era, they were doing it with a lot of other animals at the time. So dogs were just one of many that they created breeds for. And essentially, what would happen is someone would see a mutt with a look that they really liked. Perhaps they liked the temperament as well. They would find a couple of other dogs that looked like that, grow that into a certain number, and then create a breed club. And that's when they would get standardized by an organization like in the United States, we have the American Kennel Club, who would put a stamp on that pool of dogs and say, this is now a bulldog. Every dog that comes from these, say, 30 dogs from then on, as long as it's bred to one of the 30 dogs, is allowed to be a bulldog. Anything that is bred with even a drop of another breed of dog is not. So that's essentially what a purebred dog is it's inbred dogs from whatever that first grouping of dogs was when the books were closed, as they say.
So, how did breed characteristics become set so that a puppy born with the wrong look is considered inferior? Like, who started judging according to those rules?
I mean, essentially, it was just whoever was interested in it. You would have a group of fanciers who would create a dog that was just whatever they fancied at the time. And they would, maybe get a couple of other people involved who also wanted to breed dogs that looked that way as a hobby, because this was, pre any kind of animal welfare legislation, puppies born that didn't have the right look were frequently just killed pretty unceremoniously. And that kind of dovetailed into making the genetic pool for looks small enough that now things tend to breed pretty true to type. But it's all kind of arbitrary.
But certain ideal physical characteristics from a human perspective or from a breed perspective can be a disadvantage for life as a dog, right? So if you crop the ears and dock the tails, even let a dog grow excessively fluffy, it goes to the dog park and all the signals that dogs use to communicate with each other, they may not work properly.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, it's difficult because dogs, so many of us love them. They're part of our families, and yet they are a commodity, and we are buying them primarily based on liking the way that they look. And I think a lot of people, particularly who buy a lot of dogs, like the flat face breeds, are actually much more commonly purchased by first-time dog owners, is a huge part of their market. And I think it's people really, they see other people with these dogs, and they're cute and people like their dogs. And, you know, it takes a lot of time and research to come across some of these negative impacts that our aesthetic choices have on these animals who we love and really do want to be healthy and happy.
All right. So it dog breeds come and go with the times and also with the media. A couple of times now, the movie 101 Dalmatians has been an influence.
Cruella, the puppies have to be with their mother for several weeks. They're not ready to leave.
Fine. Put the little brutes on reserve for me. How much would you like?
They're not for sale.
You've come into some money, have you? Did you design some silly game that will drive the delinquent kiddies into frenzies of video delight?
As a matter of fact,
what Roger means to say is that we're not sure we're going to sell the puppies.
Anita, don't be ridiculous. You can't possibly afford to keep them. I'll pay you twice what they're worth. Come now. I'm being more than generous. £500. £7,500. Fair? £2 per spot.
Cruella, what would you do with 15 puppies?
Yeah, I mean, that's irrelevant, Anita. She can't have any because they're not for sale.
I'm getting very tired of you, Roland.
Roger.
Whatever.
How did that movie spike demand for Dalmatian puppies?
Yeah, so when the animated movie originally came out, that clip was from the live-action remake, Dalmatians went from, you can look in old newspaper classifieds to perhaps you would find one listing in the back for Dalmatian puppies. In the years following, a lot of major newspapers, you would easily see 7 to 9 different breeders advertising Dalmatians. People saw the movie and they got really excited about these beautiful, smart dogs with their spots, and they wanted to bring them home. It certainly also didn't hurt that it was a kid's movie. So you would leave the movie with your children and they would be begging for a Dalmatian and you would get them one. The same thing did happen when the movie came out again with that live action remake. But this time people started reporting on the fact that a lot of these dogs were then winding up in shelters, which didn't necessarily not happen the first time around, but I think it's something that people were much more aware of and likely to report on in the 90s versus the 60s. So we started seeing that phenomenon play out because people got dogs based on what they saw in the movie and a passing fad without really thinking about what these dogs would be like to own. So then you wound up having a lot of these dogs in the shelters, and they kind of developed a bad reputation for a while because of it and because of a lot of the poor breeding practices that people did to try and step in and fill that demand. So today people often actually refer to a dog that explodes in popularity and then winds up in animal shelters as the Dalmatian effect, thanks to those movies.
But I mean, falling in love with a movie dog obviously is problematic. We don't like decide to marry a tall blonde woman and then divorce her because she doesn't act like Mary Poppins.
I mean, maybe. Who can say? But yeah, I mean, definitely I spoke to at least one woman who's involved with the animal shelters who directly remembers someone bringing the dog back into the shelter because it didn't make coffee like the dog in the movie, which just blows my mind that someone would think that, you know, a dog without a lot of training would be able to do that. But yeah, people, you know, they get a really good sense about these dogs based on what they see in movies and are kind of, I think, consciously or subconsciously want to get one because of that.
One irony is that if you work through like a fostering or rescue organization, a lot of them now have really, you know, high standards for the people who will be allowed to take in these dogs. Someone will come and do like a literal home visit, which is all well and good. Maybe not everybody can pass, but if you've got the money to spend, you will be able to pay someone to make you a dog.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's something that we saw a lot during this pandemic puppy boom that just happened, where animal shelters ran out of at least the really desirable dogs because everyone wanted one. They were home at the same time. Reputable breeders of purebred dogs might only have a couple litters a year, which is not a lot of dogs to go around. So it's not uncommon for someone who wants, you know, say an Australian Shepherd from one of the best breeders to have to wait multiple years to get that puppy. And people don't want to wait that long. So maybe even ones who were prone to wanting to adopt a dog in typical times went to Plan B. And Plan B, in most cases, is going to be a high volume breeder, which a lot of us refer to as puppy mills.
Sometimes dogs are described by the breed according to their behavior. Is it actually, I mean, in my experience, dogs have pre-wired personalities. Is it possible to breed for temperament?
To an extent, I know that aggression is one of the temperament characteristics that is genetically heritable. However, it's a characteristic that actually a lot of genes combine in order to create. So it'd actually be pretty difficult to breed a dog specifically to act one way or another way. And yet when you go to buy a purebred dog, people often market them based on all herding dogs are going to want to herd. All golden retrievers are going to be friendly and love everyone. All water dogs are going to like swimming. And then you can go get your dog who's an individual and they don't always wind up living up to those marketing expectations, which makes people really disappointed with their dogs. I think another problem that comes out of that is, you know, there's a whole stigma against pit bulls because a lot of people think that they're really aggressive. So whenever there's a story about a pit bull biting someone, people say, yes, that, you know, doubles down on my expectation that pit bulls are a vicious dog. But when a golden retriever bites someone, which is pretty much just as likely to happen, it's an aberration. So we have these categories set, and then it's just confirmation bias all the way through about when a dog does or does not meet those expectations.
How do puppy breeders like ramp up production if Dalmatians or French Bulldogs or whatever suddenly becomes popular?
So the reputable breeders won't, which is really interesting to me. And it didn't make it into the article, but I did talk to a number of people who are considered, you know, reputable breeders. And they essentially said, even with the pandemic demand for puppies, they were doing the same thing that they always were, because that was the level of puppy volume that they and their dogs could handle and do it well. And that was what they were comfortable with. But there's something called a dog auction, which a lot of people are not aware of. They happen a lot in Missouri and other areas of the Midwest, where a lot of these high volume breeders will go and sell either, you know, puppies, or they'll sell breeding females or males. And that's a big way for this kind of supply and demand to get moved around to different breeders when the moment happens. But yeah, essentially, it just comes down to Frenchies are really popular. So now this Frenchie mother is going to breed maybe, you know, two or three litters when she would have only had one if it weren't having such high demand.
A dog auction sounds traumatic for the animal.
Yeah, I just finished reading this really interesting book called The Dog Merchants by Kim Cavan, and she talks about it a little bit. If you've ever been to a livestock auction, which most people haven't, it's very similar. The dogs are all in a back room. They're brought out, you know, one by one. You have the very fast-talking auctioneer selling them off to pretty much whoever shows up. In a lot of cases, it's people in the business who maybe they thought Dalmatians would be really big that year, and then the market for them crashes. So they're getting rid of them at low prices or whatever reason someone might have. But it's actually a very common way to buy and sell dogs, and not a lot of people are aware that they even exist.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Our number is 800-933-5372. So, Tova, we've talked about pure breeds. There's also this burgeoning market now for animals that are like crossbred to be their own specialty. So what is the story of the Labradoodle?
Yeah, the Labradoodles are very popular these days. Essentially, in 1989, there was a man who worked with the, I believe it was like a Guide Dogs for the Blind, but in Australia. And he heard from a woman who was blind, but her husband was allergic to the typical labs that you see all the time as guide dogs. And she was wondering if there was any way that he could breed a hypoallergenic dog that would, you know, work for both of them. So he tried a lot of different times to breed poodles, which famously don't shed in quite the same way as other dogs, with labs to create what we now know as the Labradoodle. However, of the initial litter that he had to allergy test the dander on each of the dogs against the woman's husband. And he was only not reactive to one of those dogs. So they became hugely popular for this, you know, marketing gimmick that they were the dog for people who have allergies. And yet it's actually pretty difficult to say that a dog definitely won't bother someone's allergies based on just the two breeds that it came from. You really have to allergy test in order to know that. And yet this was kind of the beginning of this idea that, wow, you can breed a dog to have these specific features that I like. Let's go do more of that. So Labradoodles became really popular when Game of Thrones came out. There was this project to kind of recreate the prehistoric dire wolf by essentially just breeding a lot of dogs together until you get something that looks a little bit like that. So there are a lot of these kind of side projects, and essentially they're just mutts to some extent until they get bred a lot, you know, many times over. But, you know, it's a lot easier to sell a dog for a lot of money if you call it a Frenchie Doodle than here's a rescue dog that's a mix of some random things, and I got it in an animal shelter.
Does a cockapoo or a Labradoodle or a Frenchie do, do they have to be like from one parent that is one breed and one parent that is another breed? Or do we now have Labradoodles breeding other little tiny Labradoodles?
I would imagine it's both. And the man who actually created the Labradoodle said that he regrets what he did. He referred to it as opening Pandora's box, because a lot of these, they're very like a high energy breed typically. A lot of them are not hypoallergenic. And they were so popular and people could get so much money for them that they just kind of bred them left and right. And poodles are one of those dogs that have a tendency towards a lot of hereditary diseases. So they can be prone to a lot of health issues. And he just quickly saw this getting out of control. So, you know, depending on who you're getting the dog from, maybe it's someone who very carefully does genetic tests on the lab sire that they're using and the poodle mother that they're using. But a lot of people are not remotely doing that level of, you know, care with their breeding.
So I think my family is tired of hearing me talk about how much I would like to have a corgi, because I won't ever buy one, because it's just not for me. There are lots of dogs out there that don't have homes. But should I feel guilty for even like wishing that I could have a dog just based on a set of physical characteristics when my sort of imagined perfect corgi out there, I haven't even met it?
I mean, you know, if you look at how we date as humans, you go off of, am I attracted to this person first? And then let's see if our personalities work out enough to keep spending time together. The difficulty with dogs is that you don't date a dog. You bring them home. And then if everything, you know, goes well and you've made a commitment to that dog, like they are your family now for the long haul, regardless of their what you thought you were getting. So I don't think that it's necessarily wrong to get a dog because you like the way it looks. You know, we have rescue dogs, but I got them because I liked the way they looked more than the other rescue dogs. Something about them just spoke to me. So I think that if you do your due diligence and you stay away, or at least try really, really hard if you're getting a breed like flat-faced breeds that you know are extremely prone to health issues, to only get them if you find the best possible breeder. And maybe that means waiting a little bit. I think that that's kind of doing the right thing by your dogs. But I know how that feels. My dream dog is an Irish wolfhound, and they also don't tend to live very long. So I'm like, maybe someday I'll see one at a shelter that has a little bit of that giant wolfhound look, and I can take it home and feel a little bit better about my choices.
Tova K. Danovich is a freelance journalist. Her article, The Very Cute, Totally Disturbing Tale of the American It Dog, was published by Vox, and you can still find it there. Tova, thank you so much for making time to talk with us about all this.
Yeah, I'll always talk about dogs, so thank you.
Me too. Think is a production of KERA in Dallas. Our team includes Stephen Becker, Paige Phelps, Ana Perez, Nilofer Arsala, and Micaela Rodriguez. Our interns are Madison Hurd, Sriya Reddy, and Rolando Hernandez. You can listen to Think wherever you get your podcasts. As always, I'm Chris Boyd. Have a great day.